Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is August 5th, 2021, a cool and sunny August morning here in Tennessee. As always, thanks to Ron Trammell and the Cats Tribute Band for our jazzy intro music. The birds are all around us all the time. People have been observing birds for millennia, making note of their patterns and behaviors. It is a great source of pleasure for many of us. Of course, scientific research has advanced our knowledge of birds, but there is still quite a bit about birds which remains unknown and mysterious. In Nashville today, an awesome example of nature's wonder is on display. That is the evening roost of thousands of purple martins occurring right in the middle of downtown Nashville on a small plaza in front of the Symphony Center. This has been occurring over the last couple of years and has even been the subject of a write-up in the New York Times. Yesterday, I spoke with Laura Cook and Kathy Shaw of the Warner Park Nature Center to learn about this phenomenon and also to learn about Nashville's participation and leadership in a truly remarkable technological advancement in bird research called MODIS. Some listeners may remember that Laura Cook has been my guest previously on this podcast when we did a program which focused on the Bluebird program at Warner Park. It was great fun to talk again with Laura and to renew my friendship with Kathy Shaw. And so I hope you will enjoy this program all about birds. So Laura Cook and Kathy Shaw, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you.
So we're out here this morning at the Warner Park Nature Center in a small office here, and it's just a delightful place to be. Just beautiful this morning.
It's gorgeous.
Nice and cool.
Nice and cool.
A little sunny. And my wife dropped us off here this morning, and she's out taking a walk. So a nice morning for that. So we're here today to talk about what's going on with birds and bird research at Warner Parks. And Laura, you are the head of that operation out here. So introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us about your background and what you do out here.
Sure. So Laura Cook, I'm the bird research coordinator here out at Warner Park. And we have a bird banding station that's been in operation for 40 years. This is our 40th anniversary. And I was lucky enough to start volunteering here about 5 years ago, and it evolved into a part-time position, and now I get to help continue this amazing legacy of bird research and engagement.
Laura, you have specific training in ornithology.
Yeah, I mean, I have an undergrad and master's degree in ornithology and wildlife biology, and then stepped away from that for a number of years. Worked for the Nature Conservancy, and so I feel like this has sort of come back full circle.
Good for you. Good for you. And Kathy, tell us about you're a volunteer now out here.
I am. I'm actually a former naturalist here who retired early and continued on a volunteer basis and just won't go away. They really just can't get rid of me.
Well, Kathy and I have been friends for 30 years or more, I would say.
It goes back to probably 1979.
Yeah. And you were working, I guess when I first met you, you were working at Radnor.
I was. Yeah. I went straight to Radnor from my dorm, or my apartment, my college apartment. I went straight to Radnor in my little Vega and became the caretaker first at Radnor, and then
I've forgotten that.
And then stepped into a park ranger position.
Yeah, and you were one of the very few early women park rangers.
Right, there were a couple of women who were hired before me, Sherry Spain and Sharon Bracey. And then there were several of us that were kind of hired close together in '81. So. Like Judy Coleman. I actually saw her Saturday at the alumni gathering. So they started hiring more women.
It's great to see you after these years. I follow you on Facebook a little bit, so we do stay a little bit in touch. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about what's going on with birds and bird research here. And I know that it's been a year now since y'all have put up this I guess it would you call it a radio receiver?
It's a receiver station.
Tell us about what that is. It's called MOTUS. What is that?
MOTUS. So we're now part of this MOTUS network, and what it is it's a little complicated. So I'll try to explain it as easily as I can. But what has happened in bird research over the last decade or so is that transmitters that had a long enough life needed small enough batteries to go on small birds. And with technology over the last few years, we're now able to put radio transmitters on much smaller songbirds. Before, it had to be bigger birds like, you know, raptors and eagles and things. So that's one side of it. The other part of it is some researchers up in Canada, Birds Canada, tried to think about a way to work collaboratively. And so what would happen before, if I was a researcher and I put radio tags on a bird, I'd have to go out myself and try to find those birds. So what they did is that they have this network now where people register their radio tags, they register their receiver stations, which really just looks like sort of little TV antennas up on a pole. And then all of that information is housed collectively at modus.org, so everyone can share their information. And so we installed a receiver station here at Warner Park last July on my birthday. It was a great birthday present. And so we are able, anything that is moving through Warner Parks that has this certain radio frequency, if they go by a receiver station, we will detect it, and that information then gets sent back to MOTUS so the researchers can see that. So last September, we had some tree swallows who are migrating through here that had been radio tagged up in central New York. This one specifically was the Iroquois National Wildlife Refuge. There was a researcher getting her PhD at Cornell University. And so we were able to detect that bird, send that information. It went back to her so she could be able to see it. So it's this amazing combination of technology, but also this the ability to collaborate from really Alaska all the way down to South America.
Gotcha. And you are capturing birds here, tagging them and then putting the monitors on them here.
So we have a long term, it's a 40-year banding station where we capture birds and put leg bands on. But last year we received a federal permit that allowed us to put radio tags on a certain set of birds. And so the sort of suite of birds that we decided to focus our research on were thrushes, which is, you know, robins and bluebirds in that family. And the five species that we that we're focusing on, we wanted to kind of think about year-round use of Warner Parks. And so in the summertime, we're putting radio tags on wood thrushes, which is also a declining and a species of concern here in Tennessee. In the fall, we're doing gray-cheek thrushes, Swainson's thrushes, and veeries. And then in the wintertime, we're doing hermit thrush. So those are, for that one project, that's what we're putting radio tags on. We also submitted another application with the bird banding lab and received a federal permit to put transmitters on purple martins.
Okay. So how are the birds captured so that you can tag them, band them?
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you do that?
So we have, through our regular banding station that we have here, we typically band every week. And if we catch any of those birds, so those five birds for the thrush study, we will put a radio transmitter on them. And so we're not necessarily targeting, at least for the thrushes, when we do our banding, we're not targeting them. We're hoping we'll catch them to put thrushes on, but we've put over 30 transmitters on birds just in the first year, which
Fantastic.
Is fabulous. For the purple martins, we have a 20-year study where we have been putting putting leg bands on nestlings. And so we've been monitoring the reproductive success of our purple martin nest that we have here. And so that's what we did this year with them. We put radio tags on six nestlings as we were going, just sort of our regular going ahead and putting bands on them.
So interesting. I want to talk in some detail about the purple martins and what's going on with them here in Nashville, because it's made the news.
I mean, yeah.
even as far as the New York Times last year actually had an article about it. But as I was driving in this morning, I noticed your purple martin gourds that you have here at the park. How many of those do you have, and how many are actually utilized by the...
So we have two gourds. We historically have just had one gourd system. This spring, we installed the second gourd system. And we have, each gourd system has 12 gourds, or, you know, which are sort of like a nesting cavity for them. And this year, the new gourd system had one purple martin gourd nest in it, or had one nest in it. And then the other gourd system had, I think it was 10 of them were occupied.
Okay.
So 11 nest, producing, you know, over 50 birds.
And so while the chicks are very young, you're able to band them.
Yes.
Actually, we can band birds in the nest at a certain stage. It depends on the species, but when they first hatch, their legs have a lot of fluid, and they're actually larger than they're going to be when they're adults. So at a certain point in their development in the nest, their legs actually reduce to the size they're going to be for the rest of their lives. And then it's safe to put a band on at that point.
I see. Yeah. Well, this may be the best way, or the best time, to just talk about what's going on with the purple martins. You want to tell us about that, Kathy?
Yes. Well, I think you saw my video from Monday before last. I went downtown. The staff here and volunteers are trying to take turns. We're trying to have somebody just about every night down there at the Symphony Plaza and in that area with the handheld receiver, trying to detect the birds that we put transmitters on. The 1st of July, I think it was, we put those on. And also, when you're walking around downtown next to honky-tonks, you attract people when you're standing there with a handheld receiver or big antenna. So people approach us and ask questions. So it's a great opportunity for education.
All right, well, let's set the scene and describe for the audience what actually is going on down there at the Skummerhorn each night.
Well, okay, so Sandy and I went down last week, and we stood on the pedestrian bridge, and we were watching the sky, and it was just clear, beautiful evening. And just suddenly, about, I don't know, 7:15 or so, these
at
little
dusk,
specks appear up in the sky, and there are thousands and thousands of birds. And I think when they approach downtown, they're up so high feeding. They feed very high. And they finally get low enough that you can see them. And it's just an amazing thing to watch. And then as it gets closer and closer to dark, they come closer to the buildings. And then they descend upon that plaza. And actually, they're probably a little bit more spread out than just the Symphony Center. But there are small ornamental trees down there, and that's where they roost for the night. And these birds are coming from all around the Nashville area and by tens of thousands. And last year, it was estimated there were probably 150,000 martins in that roost. And it's a lot of birds for a very small area, so they're just swirling in huge numbers over your head, and the sound is just... it's deafening. It's very loud.
As I've talked about this with you, I've learned that, you know, people that observe nature, especially those like you that do it for a living, have been aware of this roosting situation for several years. Is that right?
Yes, I think it's been documented on radar. It dates back to the 90s, but I'm sure they've been roosting here for forever, and we just weren't paying attention. But I can tell you just from experience years ago at the Titan Stadium, you know, you looked up at those preseason games in August, you look up and just see thousands of martins swirling overhead. But that roost has kind of shifted, and a couple of small roosts converged and became one roost, and they were next to I-24 for a while. They were at Metro Center in small numbers one year. But last year, they ended up there at the Symphony.
Well, they created quite a scene down there last year, as I recall. They were misidentified as starlings at first. Is that...
Yes, and there are starlings downtown. I mean, you will see a lot of starlings, but they are in the minority in this group of birds. And the Symphony folks, you know, it makes quite a mess, as you can imagine, on the stonework and, you know, the weight of the birds in the trees, and, you know, it harms the smaller trees. And so the Symphony folks, thinking they were starlings, actually hired a company to come and spray some kind of smoke. I wasn't down there, but it just so happened that Kim Bailey, who's a naturalist here, and some other birders were down there and saw them and went and talked to them and told them that these are, you know, purple martins, and they're protected, federally protected. So a bunch of phone calls were made, and they were stopped. And quickly, Laura can tell you about the how different conservation groups came together to help the Symphony.
It was pretty impressive. I mean, it was a group from Tennessee Ornithological Society, the Nature Conservancy, Tennessee Wildlife Federation, Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agencies, and just birders from the community who rallied together. And Tennessee Wildlife Federation, the Nature Conservancy, organized a fundraiser for the Symphony to help defer the cost of the cleanup and then hiring arborists later.
Gotcha.
And it was the fundraiser was extremely successful, raised enough funds that there's funding left over for this year for the Symphony to clean up as well. And in my understanding, Tennessee Wildlife Federation awarded the Symphony like their Conservation Organization of the Year award is a sort of a nod to this. You know, they went from getting ready to remove the birds to embracing the birds and having them be there and having them be part of what's happening
so
in downtown.
Cool. So
yeah,
cool.
It's amazing.
So how many weeks or months are they doing this?
We think they showed up a little early this year, but they probably by mid July they were starting to gather there. And last year they left. They were pretty much gone after about the first week of September.
Okay.
They didn't all leave on the same day, but you could just see the numbers trickling over time.
Gotcha. Yeah. So they are migratory birds. Tell us about the purple martin and their migration.
Well, they're going to travel a long way. They do go to South America, kind of the eastern portion of South America, as far south as Brazil, east of the Andes. So any of those countries between Central America and Brazil can have wintering purple martins.
And so they come back north for our summer.
They do.
And how far north do they go?
They can go into Canada.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
And so this is why
they're an eastern bird.
Right. And this is why they're federally protected, is because they are a migratory bird.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So, well, so interesting. Now, let's tie your radio technology banding together with what you're observing at the purple martins. So now you've banded some birds out here.
Yes.
And you're finding, and they're showing up in the crowd of birds downtown.
Yeah. So that was, you know, after last year, that, you know, the question we all had here, because we've been banding purple martins for 20 years, purple martin nestlings, is I wonder if our birds joined that Nashville roost before they head south for the winter. And we had no idea how to answer that. And so the radio tags is a way for us to try to figure that out. And so, as Kathy said, in early July, we put radio transmitters on six purple martin nestlings from three different gourds. And they fledged, you know, a week or two later, and we right away, once we knew that the roost was happening of the symphony, we went down there with our handheld receiver and have been detecting them. And so of the five that we put transmitters on, or the six that we put transmitters on, five of them have been detected down there. And the one that we haven't detected, we actually think there's something maybe not right with the antenna. We haven't really ever gotten a great signal from it. So that's pretty amazing. Some of the, a couple of other really interesting things that we have learned, not only are our birds going there at night, but what we have found, if you look, even I did it this morning, like I was up at 5:30, so I went to my little radar app on my phone, and you can see right around 5:30 in downtown Nashville, this red circle lights up, and that's the purple martins leaving the roost and in going out.
So you're talking about the weather radar that anybody can access.
And it's not just Nashville. There are other roosts around Middle Tennessee that you can watch dispersing.
So if you didn't know better, you'd think it might be raining downtown.
Yeah, you think right. There's a thunderstorm. Right. Yeah.
I watch one particular channel, I guess I shouldn't say which one, but anyway, they point it out often in the morning. They'll explain to people what's happening when you see those rings leaving those areas.
Yeah.
They actually say this is a bird.
Yes.
A bird uh-huh.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
That's, I haven't seen that before. That's yeah. So interesting. So interesting.
And so we know that they're leaving the roost around 5:30 in the morning, and what's interesting is that several of the birds that we have radio tags on, they're leaving at 5:30, and by 6 o'clock, we're detecting them here out at Warner Park Nature Center.
Okay.
The other thing that's really interesting is we helped start, it started off as the Tennessee MODIS Collaborative, and now it's turned into a Southeast working group of, there's like over 10 states of us trying to work together to put up receiver stations throughout the Southeast. And so there is a receiver station just east of Clarksville that the Nature Conservancy put up last year. It's about 35 miles northwest of here. And we have had one of our purple martins has been detected there twice. And so, and then a couple days later, it was detected here. And so it just gives you a sense of like they're really during the day, they're foraging, and they're in this is a large area that they're moving around in, but then they all come back down in the evenings to Nashville, right in the middle of downtown.
Just so fascinating. Now, and are you, when you go down there with your handheld receiver, are you able to spot birds from other areas, like from New York or Pennsylvania?
We haven't so far. Okay. We're hoping we get a hit from another area, but we're going to learn a lot from this, but my guess is that we're just getting birds from Middle Tennessee.
Got you.
In the immediate, like, you know, obviously they're going 35 miles away, so probably just from this circle. But who knows? You know, once migration starts, you know, once these birds start coming down from the north, who knows? Maybe some will start moving up there earlier and join the roost here. We have no idea.
Yeah, there's not many researchers who are putting transmitters on purple martins right now. And so one of the things we're trying to do is, and I actually think it might happen in the next couple of days, is we're going to put a temporary receiver station in downtown, really close to the roost, just to put up for a month or so. We just received permission last night to put it on one of the buildings down there. So,
okay. Can you reveal which building, or is it?
It's not confirmed yet.
Okay, well, then we won't go. All right,
we'll give them credit as soon as we have it.
That's
up there.
Okay. Well, I understand that y'all have plans to put another receiving unit out here at the park.
Yeah, so right now our receiver station is right here at the Nature Center, and we put it here because we wanted to be close to our banding station so that when we put transmitters on, we'd be detecting the birds. But we're in a little bit of a valley here, and so we're going to be putting a second receiver station at the Harpeth Hills Golf Course. The clubhouse is kind of up on a hill, and these two combined stations will give us coverage across the park. So really any bird flying north-south over Warner Parks between the two stations should be detected. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited to get that.
And so when it's detecting, is this like a 24/7 detection? And is there There's like a recording of what it's detecting.
Yes.
Okay. Right. But our particular tags that we're putting on birds are solar powered. So they're only sending off a burst, a signal during the day when they're getting sunlight.
I see.
And we have ordered 20 more transmitters that are hybrid that will have the ability to store a little bit of power to do some nighttime transmissions, but we haven't received those yet. We're hoping to get those by the fall.
Right, because a lot of these birds migrate at night, so it's not going to be very helpful if they're not transmitting a signal as they pass over a tower in the middle of the night.
Sure, sure. This sounds like expensive technology.
It is.
And how's that happening? I mean, the city of Nashville does not have the funding to do this.
No, I mean, we're lucky because we're supported through Friends of Warner Parks, and we received a generous grant, a couple of grants from the Barbara J. Mapp Foundation. And so that's how we've been able to fund this. It's
excellent.
All through donations
and
grants. Yeah.
Now you're learning other things with your research in the electronic banding. I was reading in the little annual report that you sent to me about what you're learning about Warner Park as a feeding station, as a place where the birds fatten up before their travels.
Yeah, so this is sort of what started us down this road. Is when we looked at when we started to look at our banding data, one of the things that I found interesting was that we had some recaptures, and that's where we band a bird and then, you know, maybe a few days later we capture it again, or a year later we capture it again. And for some of these thrushes, what was interesting was that we were catching them a few days later and they were putting on 10-25% of their body weight in just a couple of days. And that got us thinking, you know, maybe Warner Parks. So when birds, as Kathy mentioned, a lot of songbirds migrate at night. And for some reason, that there's a lot of science behind it, when they're migrating, they're attracted to light, to large urban areas. And so, you know, they're flying at night, they're attracted to this urban area, and then they have to land for the day. And so a lot of times that's really bad, right? Because there's not good habitat for them. But Nashville has a lot of great parks surrounding it, and Warner Parks, especially with its tree cover, and it's got a creek here. We started to think, you know, maybe Warner Parks is actually a really important migratory stopover. Like a refueling station. They're attracted to the city from the lights. And so that was our original research question. And just from our initial first year of doing this, you know, I guess for some reason I had always thought, oh, these thrushes, you know, they're coming from northern Canada and they're just spending one night here and then they're leaving. What we've found is that they're actually spending significant amount of time here, anywhere between, you know, 4 to 12 days here. And, you know, it's a fabulous place. We've got shelter, we've got insects, we've got fruit, and we've got water. And so to me, that's the reason why we want to try to do this research, is to make this case that these urban parks are critically important. And so how do we think about managing them?
And I live close to the park and have watched. I've lived here for 37 years. And this park was once surrounded with cow pastures and forest and very few houses. And over the years, of course, as Brentwood has grown up and Old Hickory Boulevard corridor has developed, you know, the forests are fragmented. The fields are no longer cow pastures. They're covered with houses. And you hope that your little oasis here is enough for those birds. And that's what we're hoping to find out from this research. And, you know, something of all the 5 species that Laura mentioned earlier, there's only been one bird, I think, that we've banded, the hermit thrush. We banded in 2016 and have captured twice since then.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, and we're able to put a transmitter on.
Oh, good.
All
good.
Of those other recaptures of thrushes were within the same week.
Yep.
So it's going to be exciting to see these birds with transmitters, if they are coming back through here, if we put the transmitter on the fall, are they traveling back through here in the spring? Are they coming back the next fall? We're going to finally be able to answer that question because we haven't been able to answer
it. I'm glad Kathy mentioned that, because that is the other part of the question, the research questions that we had, is sort of that question of fidelity. You know, are these birds, do they learn? You know, we know for some species, like hummingbirds, they remember exact, you know, feeders, exact plants. And so the question is, for some of these other songbirds, do they have a fidelity to come back here during their migration? And for like the hermit thrush, are they coming back here every winter? And again, that makes the case that if they're relying on this as an important place to overwinter or to do a stopover, then we need to be ensuring that we're managing these parks that way to in the long run.
Is Metro doing this at Bell's Bend or any of the other areas?
Not yet.
Okay.
It will depend on whether or not we decide to expand. And we're already talking about next year with the Purple Martins. They do have gourds at Bell's Bend and Shelby.
I see.
And so hopefully we'll be able to go out to those locations and see if those join the ranks downtown during the roost.
Am I correct in having read that Reflection Riding also has one of these receiver stations in Chattanooga area?
Has it been activated?
I believe Dr. David Aborn has, I think he has one station up that's active, and I believe he's planning to put up several more in the sort of Alabama, you know, sort of that corner Chattanooga area.
Right.
We just had another one that went online this week near Knoxville. Seven Islands.
Oh, Seven Islands. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say Iams Nature Center, but it's Seven Islands.
The numbers
Islands.
Are growing in Tennessee. Yeah. This MODIS network has really been active in Canada in the Northeast, and we've lagged behind here in the Southeast. And most of the towers were along the coast of the Gulf of Mexico, but we're starting to fill in those spaces now. And so the hope is to have, you know, a line of antennas that cross the state, so anywhere a bird crosses, they'll be able to be detected by one of these towers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and the more we learn about their patterns, the better we're able to protect them. I presume that's the whole point. Right.
You know, you can fly over Warner Park and it looks like forest, right? And you think, oh, it's great habitat, but in reality, if you look at a map, those forests are very fragmented with roads, with hiking trails and horseback riding trails and buildings and such. And so, you know, just because you have a lot of trees doesn't mean that it's quality habitat. We're so far the evidence is showing that it is quality habitat. We're doing a lot of invasive, exotic invasive removal right now in the parks. Friends is really...
Speaking of invasive exotic plants, such as honeysuckle and privet hedge.
Right.
Right.
Yes, and there's a lot of it here on this campus that's going to be removed soon. And we're going to be able to see over time how that affects birds and whether that helps them or, you know, for all we don't know, are those thrushes eating those privet berries and those honeysuckle berries? Are they depending on that? We don't know. We think probably not their first choice of food, but we'll be able to track things like that over time too. And that's one advantage of this banding station. We've been in existence for so long, longer than a lot of stations. We're able to track these changes over time.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting. Now, we're talking about birds today, and I wanted to just take the opportunity to ask a question or two that that is out there in the wind about birds. We're hearing that we should not be feeding birds seeds in the summertime at home. Tell us what that's all about.
So there has been, it's been a more of a mid-Atlantic issue, but there is something going on with birds. It seems to be affecting robins, blue jays, starlings, some of the bigger birds, where they're having eye issues and neurological issues. And so there's been, you know, birds have been sent to labs, the forensic labs, trying to figure out what it is, and they've ruled out sort of all of the usual suspects of diseases. They don't at this time know what is causing this, and so the advice that has been given is that for now, take your feeders down, which is fine. It's a good time of year to take your feeders down anyways. The birds have plenty of food. What you do leave up, hummingbird feeders, if you have a bird bath, to clean them frequently. And so that's just until we kind of know what's going on. That's been the advice from the Tennessee Wildlife Resources agencies and other agencies.
The theory being that the feeders are kind of a vector of disease in some way.
It brings birds together that wouldn't normally be in close contact with each
and then,
other.
And then the waste has potential to be spreading things.
Sure.
So
sure.
And they just say if you have feeders, take them down, clean them with a 10-to-1 water bleach solution, just put them away, and just try to keep everything, especially the water bath. I clean mine out every day and refill it and scrub it down really well. So hopefully they'll be able to determine what's causing it.
But that's what you should be doing all the time with your feeders. You should be keeping them clean and cleaning up under your feeder poles, trying to keep the waste down to a minimum.
Exactly.
I mean, that's
exactly.
Just being a responsible homeowner.
Host. And,
yeah. Host. Yes.
So is there, before we close, is there anything else to report that's going on here that's worthy of mention?
Oh gosh, we have a lot of projects going on right now, and so we're sort of starting to wrap up our bluebird season. We're getting ready to ramp up our hummingbird banding season, and then we'll have fall migration is just around the corner. And I think for hummingbirds and the fall migration banding, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that the COVID situation allows us to keep it open to the public. And so I think if folks can make it out to the Nature Center to view some of those banding sessions, that's always really fun.
Okay, so if people want to know when and where, et cetera, who do they call? How do they do?
For right now, I typically would say go to our website, but it's under construction right now.
Okay.
And so if folks have questions, just call the Nature Center. And generally, hummingbird banding is generally Wednesday mornings. It's from 7:30 to 9:00. That'll be starting up soon. And then our fall banding will be starting in early September. And that's generally Tuesdays from 8 to noon. But again, it's best to call before you head on out. Call the Nature Center.
And that's weather dependent, too.
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Well, thank you both for joining me today. It's really been a lot of fun to learn about what's going on out here and to catch up with the two of you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for spreading the word.